When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast. I'm in Bryanston in Johannesburg today to talk to Dietlof Maree, the CEO of fibre to the home provider Vumatel, for an update on what the company has been up to. Dietlof, welcome to the podcast. You took over from Vumatel's founding CEO, Neil Schoeman, last year. Neil moved on to the role of executive chairman, and you were previously with Vodafone and led their the company's operations in the DRC and Tanzania, if I'm not mistaken. Why did you decide to take on the Vumatel role?
Hi, Duncan. I think let me start there a little bit. I started in Vodacom in 1995. That's obviously when the company started. It was a year old, basically. And I stayed with the company then for about 3-4 years in South Africa. Then I became the CEO in Congo for 5 years. I went to Tanzania, and then from Tanzania I actually went to Eastern Europe with Vodafone for 6 years.
Oh, that was to Albania.
Albania.
Where is Albania?
It's a beautiful little place, just above Greece, so between Montenegro and Greece.
Okay.
On the eastern side of Europe.
Okay.
I stayed there for 6 years.
What took you to Albania?
It was getting closer to the group. I wanted to actually get closer to Vodafone Group. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very close to Vodacom Group in South Africa and Africa, and then obviously I went closer to Vodafone in that side of the world. Coming back after Albania, my kids are both studying overseas. So the one is doing medicine in Milan, and the one just completed a business degree in San Diego. And basically, the kids were all over the world, and we decided, listen, let's come back. Mm-hmm. And then I started talking to Neil. I was in Chicago the December 2017, and I started talking to Neil. And he told me about Buma and what they're doing. And I was interested, you know. And coming back, me and Shamil, we are obviously very good friends. I sat down and I decided, listen, I think it's time to move. You know, it's got back. But I love emerging markets, and I love new businesses, and I love actually turning around things. But I love that emerging market feel of business. You know, and that's why I actually went to Congo to Tanzania and Albania, always to do something. You know, we create stability, launch new things, or turn it around. You know, make it more profitable, and that excites me, I must say. Because normally with emerging markets, these companies that start, there's energy in there, you know, and you can do a lot of you can make a huge impact, firstly, and you can make a big difference. And that excited me, you know. And when I came back into Vodacom and I sat down and they wanted to put me in a normal position, you know, the director's position again, I mean, it was for me a little bit more exciting coming into a market that is absolutely growing. We can make an impact, and we can actually change the way South Africa gets data out there to people that I believe needs it.
Right.
And that was it. You know, it was first Neil, obviously. I still think he's a super leader. I think the company is very dynamic and fast growing, and I love the industry.
Yeah.
Because it's starting off.
Mm. Is it a big shift to moving from the mobile side of things into a fixed line business?
Honestly, it is. Mm. It's not that complicated. And I always explain it to my team. You know, mobile is complicated because it's huge networks. Mm. And if you just look at it from a competitive point of view, you know, pricing changes, marketing strategies, it changes very, very fast. I mean, we do 3 or 4 price plans a month.
Yeah.
You know, we've got now you know, on-demand billing type of scenarios, and the technology is absolutely changing so quickly that that it's different. Mm. This is a little bit more stable. It's a little bit more simple. But it was for me, it's a new industry.
Yeah.
And it's a new technology. So it was quite a challenge for me to get to grips with just that. Mm. And it's obviously much smaller than the Vodafones and Vodacoms of the world.
Yeah.
You know? So you had to just bring back that expectation a little bit, you know.
So Neil's executive chairman now. You're in the CEO role. You, I'd imagine, look after the day-to-day running of this company. What is Neil's responsibility, and how did the two of you work together?
No, he was chairman, so obviously he gave some guidance. He couldn't just leave the company. I mean, he started the company 4.5 years ago, so he took over the chairman role, I would say, and that was basically a handover process.
Okay.
You know, he just wanted to. I mean, we were in the process of selling the company.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Neil just wanted to be. He was part of that machine, but he let me run the company.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a little bit more just to make sure that it was seamless.
Yes.
So between myself, Neil and Joe, I think that was and Quibus, the financial director, I think the four of us had to make this thing happen seamless, because that's how you do transition. I believe, you know, you have to have a succession planning in place that a big transition like this is totally seamless, because that actually positions you from a competitive point of view and a continuity point of view going forward.
Okay, so what is Neil's day-to-day involvement in the business today?
No, nothing. No, Neil.
He's left.
He's left. Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought he was still in the chairman role.
No. He has left. So okay. He's actually based in London now. I think he
is. He really?
Yeah. So he's commuting between London and Stellenbosch.
So has he gone off to do new things entirely?
I think he's taking a break. So I think he's in the Mediterranean somewhere on a boat at the moment.
Oh, lovely.
having some fun. but I still talk to him now and then, and he's. He's actually enjoying himself,
yeah.
I think.
I remember being with Neil at where they first broke ground in Parkhurst.
Mm-hmm.
I forget which year it was. Must have been, 3-4 years ago now? In fact, I've got a photo of him somewhere. I think it's on our website, where he puts the shovel in the ground and starts this company off. It's amazing to see just how far it's come in such a short period of time, right?
No, I think what Joe and Neil did, building a business like this, is absolutely fantastic. But I think it's also time to give it over to somebody bigger.
Yeah.
You know what I say? So I honestly think the timing of the exit was also very, very well timed.
Yeah. Well, kudos to him, because it's difficult for some founders to let go, and it can lead to problems, as we've seen at other IT companies in South Africa. But Vumatel, as you've alluded to, was recently sold to a company called CIVH, which is part of the Remgro stable, right?
Yes, that's right.
They also own a big chunk of Dark Fiber Africa, amongst other telecommunications assets. What's the plan now that the deal is done? Will DFA and Vumatel be merged at some point, or will they continue to be run as separate businesses for the foreseeable future?
It's still in the starting phase. But the acquisition just happened, but how we see it is the two entities will be separate businesses. So you'll have DFA with their subsidiaries on the one side, and you'll have Vumatel on the other side with our subsidiaries. And so the businesses will be run totally separate. I think if you look at also what the Competition Commission preconditions said is at least the planning officer should be totally separate. So we've put that in place. We've totally separated, not that they were ever together, but we made sure that there were very strong walls between the planning officers, with confidentiality agreements and non-disclosure agreements signed by both those divisions. So, but that in itself is also not a big problem, because DFI actually publishes all their planned work and they delivered work on a website every day. So it's not that's not available to the public. So that's the one thing. So DFA on the one side will keep operating the wholesale and the backhaul and the long distance fiber, and we will be doing still the fiber to the home business and as a separate entity.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, it's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of talk in the market that there's the potential here to merge assets and create some sort of new large telecommunications operator that's going to take on the incumbent telecom in a wide range of of fields, but that's nothing that's being looked at in the short term.
At the moment, from a VUMA point of view, I think we'll get synergies definitely between us and SADV, which is the other fibre. That's a quick fix.
Okay.
So I think we'll look at efficiencies, obviously making sure that we don't do overbuilds or overplanning on that side of the business. So I think from a fibre, and I can talk from the fibre to the home point of view, Definitely, we'll see some synergies. I think there are efficiencies that we can build in from a group point of view. If you look at maintenance, if you look at the SADV side of the planning, they're very good on MDU builds, which is multi-dwellings, like their state type of fibre builds. We can learn from them, but I actually think they can learn from us as well. You know, so I think there will be different synergies between some of the companies, like the SADV side of it. But for now, it'll be still run as definitely two companies, two entities, DFA focusing on the backhaul, M&O, big customers on that side, different service levels, and we'll be focusing with the ISPs and the customers from a fiber to the home point.
Okay. So does CIVH own 100% of Vumatel now, or are there still other shareholders?
No, it's 100% of...
100%
of Vumatel.
Okay. When the CIVH acquisition of Vumatel was approved by the competition authorities earlier this year, it included two public interest obligations. One was that you have to provide free uncapped fibre to public and private schools, which I know you were already doing to a large extent. And the second was confidential, according to the commission. The commission said that this was due to business sensitivity. I'm going to try my luck here and ask you if you can provide any color on what that entails.
I think the one is the schools, which for me is super good. You know, that's the one. I said, listen, we'll have to keep this business as separate so we don't get special advantages in this process. And that's definitely the planning officers. I think because the information is published on a daily basis, I think that's not a big risk.
Yeah.
But we've put, in any case, plans in place to actually ensure that happens. I think the third one was definitely a little bit reporting requirements that we have to do yearly now, which is also very positive. Mm-hmm. Another positive for us is also they approved or basically wants us to continue with the emerging market or the emerging markets type of rollout and development. Mm. And I think that's a positive as well. So I see a lot of positives coming from it to say, listen, can't we get the fiber into these developing markets or emerging markets at a price point that makes sense? So for me, it was a good outcome, basically all positive. I love the schools. Currently, we're connecting 250 schools across South Africa with 1 gig free service. But I think we can do better than that. I think we can even look at some content at the end of it, partner with the Googles of the world, and we are in talks with them to say, listen, can we assist with the content or maybe the curriculums to actually get that the content into the schools or delivered in a better way to the schools. So for me, the schools is good, and the emerging markets and the low LSM type of scenario market is a very positive.
Well, I want to delve into the emerging market side of things, the lower LSM side of things later, because I know that was a passion of Neil's, and I'm keen to find out how you guys are progressing with that. But before we get there, maybe just an update on your FTTH footprint now. How much fiber have you rolled out? How many homes have you passed? How many people have you connected? I know your focus has been Joburg, Cape Town, Durban. Are there plans to expand beyond those geographies as well?
Yes, definitely. So just to give you a little bit of an update. I mean, we basically pass about nearly 600,000 homes now. Hmm. You know, so that's just huge, and that's about 15,000 kilometers of fiber across South Africa. Yes, we are focusing on Joburg still, which is our key. That's where we started.
Yeah.
So that's still the lion's share of our business. But then we're looking at Ekurhuleni, which is growing like crazy. We just delivered another 30,000 homes in that area. And then we're looking at Cape Town and the Cape Town area as well, which is absolutely a success story for us. So I would say if you rate it, I mean, Joburg is definitely number one, Cape Town followed, and then Ekurhuleni, the East Rand of Joburg is absolutely picking up. Durban is a little bit slower. KZN is for us a little bit slower.
What's the reason for that?
So it's just a little bit more difficult to do business. You know, it's two things. It's a little bit difficult to get permission to build. It's a little bit more difficult to build. You know, there's a lot of forum activity there, so it's a little bit more difficult to build in those areas.
When you say forum activity, what do you mean by that?
There's a lot of approval level, okay. You know, so there's local approvals that you have to get, and sometimes, I mean, there's a it's not clear who's got the approval to build in these areas, and then you get people that stop you now and then to build, yes. Mm. And that for me, because we're putting our people first, I mean, security is definitely a number one for us, you know, so... Yeah. So we're not going to jeopardize that, you know. So for us, security is absolutely critical. So, but then also the take-up in KZN is a bit slower. I don't know why, but the take-up on our network, if you compare KZN with the rest of South Africa, it's a little bit slower on that side of the business.
Is that a function of disposable income?
I don't know. I think it might be visibility. It might be a thing of just economics. You know, we are now putting a very structured commercial plan in place to say, listen, and that's how I think the business will change in time. As you know, just from a land grab build point of view, I think there's really a maintenance side focus of the business now. If you look at the older areas like in Johannesburg, there's a big customer focus in the older areas of the business. And then in your newer areas and your late adoption areas like the slower adoption areas like the Durbans, I think there's a very structured commercial plan that we have to follow. You know? So we're looking really from I still think we can do very well in KZN. Mm-hmm. But for me the big thing is, remember, every region competes for that capex. You know, so I'm going to take that capex where I can really put it into the ground quickly, get a return on it fast, get the adoption rates up. Mm. With the security side of it, I mean, that's all that, you know, those areas of the country will win. Mm. But I think still KZN has got huge, huge opportunities, and there's still huge opportunities in Cape Town for us to in KZN to actually drive forward.
You haven't historically focused on Tshwane or Pretoria. Is that an area of interest, or have other fibre providers already wrapped up that market?
SADV has been focusing there as well. But our strategy is clear. I mean, we don't believe in overbuild.
Yeah.
So we got quite a clear strategy. We believe in open access, really complete open access. We've got 63 ISPs on our network now. And the second thing is, and this is our success story, and we don't do overbuilds. Mm-hmm. You know, if OpenServe or SADV is in an area, we won't go overbuild in those areas because economics just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many places to build in South Africa that we'd rather put the capex in the ground where we should build. Mm. You know, so that's why we stayed out of Tshwane.
Yeah.
But that'll change maybe in time. You know, we might see, listen, SADV's footprint is too small in some areas, and we can actually extend on that. But the third thing, and then is also the backhaul cost of it. You know?
Yeah.
So we won't go into areas where we have to get a solution where we can go into areas where the backhaul cost is super expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's basically the strategy.
And do you see opportunity in smaller cities, places like Port Elizabeth, East London, maybe Bloemfontein, and some of those places?
Yes, I do. I see. First of all, easy. I mean, we got the business as usual, which is the big metros.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think there's a lot of work we can do there.
Yeah.
But I don't see 600,000-700,000 homes in these areas. I see about 100,000 homes that we can really go out and connect. Mm. After that, you have to go into secondary cities.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to do it at in a way that the model makes sense. You know, it has to be efficient. It has to be, you have to have a return on investment on it. You know, otherwise it gets a little bit difficult to maintain and sustain that investment. So secondary cities for me, definitely. And then I really think the emerging side of it, you know, where people actually thought we'll never have fiber. I think there's an area where we can really, really explore, you know, and we will.
Yeah. So how do you actually decide if you're going to build in a suburb? Is there you must have a model that you apply. Is it purely based on the amount of interest you receive from residents in that area? Has it got to do with how economically well off that area is? I mean, what criteria do you apply before you decide to start digging?
I think in the beginning, it was a little bit of an LSM. It was a household income type of a scenario to say, listen, that was a driver. You know, it's like a high ARPU type of a. Then there's back all these costs.
Yeah.
You know, is there access to getting this data back to a POP? You know, and the back all of it. You know, so the economics must. What's the distances? You know, another thing is also the house fronts. You know, how big are the yards in these in some of these areas? Mm-hmm. You know, because you're building per meter. So every meter that you build, the more expensive that house becomes to connect. So it's a lot of things. It's density of as well of people. You know, but then we do a feasibility on it. We do a town halls. We look at interest. Mm. And we put all of that together and we build it into a model. And we always try and get to a 30% uptake rate quite fast.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of things. But really, if you look at the secondary cities, backhaul cost was always the, you know, it's because these are smaller cities.
Yes.
You know, so you've got 2,000-4,000 homes in that area. You know, does the model make sense? That's the question.
Yeah. And I suppose in the big metros, DFA has already done a lot of that backhaul work because they've connected up a lot of mobile base stations. Mm. So that fiber is actually running through the streets already, so you can just plug into it. Exactly. If you go to a smaller city, that fiber, that backhaul is not necessarily there. You might have to do it yourselves.
Exactly. Mm. And if you have to do it yourself, then it becomes more expensive. Yeah. You know, it just becomes not feasible.
Yeah. So is it a prerequisite to have a backhaul provider in a suburb or a town already before you'll go in, or would you consider building your own backhaul?
No, we don't build our own.
You don't do backhaul.
We've never done that. Yeah, but there's a lot. Open. There's Telkom. There's MTN. Vodacom has got some access now.
Okay. And do you use all of those providers as backhaul?
We use all of. We use the most efficient one if you go into those areas. But we haven't gone into the secondary cities really.
Mm.
But I think that is an option for us to obviously look at.
Mm. So I'm just keen maybe to get a view from you on what consumers can expect from Vumatel going forward in terms of services, speeds, pricing, that sort of thing. You currently offer, I think, everything from 4 megabits per second all the way up to 1 gigabit per second. Any plans to change those plans, to increase speeds, reduce costs at certain points, not to give away too much of your strategy, of course, but what is your thinking around your product portfolio?
I think if you look at what happened in the last 12 months on just the products we give out there, we discontinued the 4 meg product.
Discontinued,
Yeah, we discontinued. So the minimum is now a 10 meg.
10 meg,
10 meg service. And then we go to a 20, is a 50 meg service, 100, a 200 service, and a gig service. But that's the demand that's out there. Mm. I think if you look at the devices and the demand of the people and people doing streaming and gaming and things, I think 10 meg servers is going to be the norm. Mm-hmm. You know, and open server also changed to a 10 meg minimum service. And I think that's where you see the DSL conversion happening. You know, they're between a 4 and an 8 type of a speed. And I think that will change in time. I think as fiber take over, you know, the 10 meg service will be the service, the at least the entry service.
Baseline, yeah.
Customer-wise, if you look at it, I mean, we've put billions of rands into the ground, you know. So the models are working. It's not a short-term model. These are long-term models that we work on. So if you look at our customers, remember, and this is what we also did this year, we really clearly defined who the customers are. And our straight direct customers are the ISPs.
Yeah.
So we got 62, 63 of these ISPs, total open access. And I think we're quite competitive there. Mm-hmm. If you look at us versus all, and that we will stay competitive on that. Then obviously they put their margins on and their price points become, and that's linked to a service that they give and additional services that they give on top of the network. But I think really we are competitive. If you look at us versus the world from a retail selling price, I think we're super competitive. And in a market where data pricing is quite expensive, if you just look at mobile, I think giving uncapped is absolutely critical, because what you're seeing is in areas where you've got 5-6 devices in homes connected, you need uncapped. You know, you don't want to do top-ups every time. So I think everything will move to the uncapped side of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the good move of it.
Yes.
You know, and then if you look at the data that people consume on these pricing, I mean, it actually becomes affordable.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got 5, 6, 7 devices linked, connected to these fiber lines.
And it changes the way you use the internet. I mean,
totally.
If you're used to a capped connection, if you're used to only a mobile connection for that matter, you're always watching. I can't watch that YouTube video. I'm going to use up my data. But now you don't care. You just stream everything and you do anything you want.
Yeah, that's a world trend if you look at it. If you look at you've got Wi-Fi at home, you've got Wi-Fi at the work if you look at anywhere in Europe.
Yeah.
And basically, you've got even got Wi-Fi on the trains and the transport. Mm. So you use the mobile just to be connected wherever you don't,
in between.
Where you're not linked to one of those networks.
Yeah.
And I think slowly, we're still in Africa, but slowly, slowly, we'll get there.
Mm.
You'll see convergence happening, you know, where you and it's happening. You know, where you've got this connected home type of subscriber, connected work subscriber, and you've got the mobile side in between.
So let's talk about, and I know this was a passion project of Neil's, and I, as I said, I didn't know he'd completely left the organization, but he broke the story with us a couple of years ago now about Vumatel's plans to build fiber in townships, starting with Alexandra here in Johannesburg, and I know things have been fairly quiet on that front. Is that project still progressing?
That project's still progressing. I saw some articles in the paper last week about it, that we're not progressing with it and we're not doing it anymore. We're fully committed to it. It was actually one of the case studies that the Competition Commission also looked at with Mitchell's Plain. There was just a little bit of a delay there, you know, between the municipality on way leaves. Then there was a little bit of a technology delay from our side on how we're going to do it, because it's totally, totally a different model, you know. But we're going ahead. We've got a solution. I don't want to give a timeline on it yet.
Okay.
We haven't started yet. We got the approvals now. So it's basically getting the technology out there. So just watch this. I think we will do it very quickly. But more exciting for us is the Mitchell's Plain.
Yeah.
So we do things a little bit differently. A lot of people come up and they tell you where they're going and they say, listen, we've done. We first do it and then we talk about it a little bit. So we've connected now. Basically, we've built nearly 1,000 homes in Mitchell's Plain. We're building the next 42,000 homes in Mitchell's Plain. Now we're currently busy with that. We've connected the first subscribers. We were there with some of our shareholders on Friday, where we actually did an install in one of the houses. It was absolutely an amazing experience. And we're doing it at a price point and a technology that just makes sense. You know, so we're giving a 20 service, 2010 service in those areas, which is a megabits per second service at a price point of 399 resale, including VAT. So I think from that point of view, it just absolutely makes sense. Mm. It addresses the need at an affordable price, and it's uncapped, and it's dedicated. So it's not that you compete for the service. You get your 20 megs per link and at a price point of $399 uncapped.
So you're working with a particular ISP on this project?
We're working with all the big ISPs now. We don't want to do the POC with all the ISPs because it was a proof of concept.
Sure.
So on the proof of concept, there were a few things. We picked a few of the big ISPs. Remember, 8 of our ISPs make up 81% of our subscribers. So you got the big ones.
Yeah.
But we allowed everybody to take part. It's just the initial 1,000 POC side of it.
Mm-hmm.
We limited it because it's quite technical and quite complicated, but it's open for everybody, you know. So we launched it now. It's something else as well. It's a prepaid model. So I think it's the first in South Africa. We're doing it on a prepaid model in two ways. You've got a recurring prepaid model where it's still a prepaid model, but it's recurring every month.
Mm-hmm.
Or you do it a prepaid as you go, 28-day bundles that you buy for $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
But then obviously you have to put voucher and token numbers in every month that you want to recharge.
Yeah.
So I think a few good things. The price point, I think it's a first. I think the areas that we're delivering on a first. You know, it's really we live in these areas. That's what I like to, and I mean that's the first time we talk about this. It's live already. It's not that we're planning or building it. It's we've got customers live on the system, and the second thing, it's a prepaid model at a price point that is absolutely affordable.
So how did you get the price down? What did you do differently?
We had to do different things, you know. So we don't give the customer there, which is a limitation, obviously, but we don't give you the option to pick different packages. Mm-hmm. You just got one product in this area, so you don't have a product range that you can pick 7 or 8 different speeds on. You get a 20 meg service. And it'll stay on a 20 meg service for a while. We can upgrade this in time depending on the uptake and how it goes. But it's still limited it'll never go more than 100 meg servers. If right. we really want to go over 100 meg servers in time, you'll have to really invest in it differently. And then it's economics again. If you look at the home fronts in these areas, they 10 meters long. Mm-hmm. You know, so the cost of to build in these areas are a little bit different building in Parkhurst,
yeah.
where you got a 35 meter house front.
Yeah.
So it was basically that. The biggest thing for us was a little bit more the security side of it, but it was good. We worked with the community. We have got local involvement from a distribution and a reselling point of view from the community, where we put this community project together, where we took people that were homeless basically, and we coached them and we got them into our teams, and they are doing our reselling and selling of the products. So we're trying to actually engage the community as well to take part in this whole thing, which all of all brings down the cost. You know, it's not that we're tracking people in there and tracking them out. We're using the local community yeah. to actually sell the product. And the uptake and the energy and the if you just look at the people, I mean, we had this little girl walking, you know, on the streets, and the contractors were digging, and she came past the contractor and she asked him, listen, what are you doing? And he said, no, we're putting fiber down, you know. And immediately she asked him what the Wi-Fi password was. So that's how they, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. And we're changing, I believe, the way we're gonna get data into areas that really need data. And this is groundbreaking. This is transforming the industry.
So are you running a fiber line into every person's house?
It's not every person's house.
It's not a case of a Wi-Fi central point that people connect to.
No, it's definitely not a Wi-Fi.
Okay.
I mean, we're going to get away from that. It's a dedicated. You get your dedicated 20 meg service. Mm-hmm. There's a fiber line into your house. We got a few things that I'm not going to say now, but it's we brought down the cost. Mm-hmm. We actually even working with the ISPs then to bring some of the costs down.
I presume the line is more contender than it might be in. Oh. It's the same.
It's a GPON network 20 meg service.
But from an ISP perspective, are they managing the bandwidth more carefully? Like there's a smaller bandwidth pool perhaps available.
No, ISPs at the moment
no. Okay.
But so you'll get your 20 meg service. Yeah. I mean, I was standing in the house on Friday.
Yeah.
And in the first one of the first installs we did. And they've got 5-6 devices linked up in that house. Mm. And this little boy, the son, was actually a gaming specialist. So he's a gamer as well. So they need the speed.
Yeah.
It's not that they need different speeds in the emerging side.
So the demand is there.
The demand is there.
It's just the price point that has to be right.
The demand is there and the need is there even more. I mean, imagine, you just look at safety.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids, you look at the flats, the safety on the Cape Flats at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people, the entertainment that they use in the houses are huge.
Mm.
So it's there. The need is there.
Yeah.
The price point was always a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
And it was getting a technology out there without slacking on the quality. But it's getting a price point out there at a quality that's acceptable. You know, I always take it like in Africa. People think in Africa, you take the DRC. You think people would be happy with a worse network than South Africa? No, because they pay. If they drop a call, they lose their disposable income is less. So they demand a better network actually. Mm. So the same, and that's the solution. I honestly believe in that the solutions we give into these houses should be from a quality point of view up there.
And I guess people can make the money available because they're probably already spending quite a lot on mobile data, which they won't have to spend as much on going forward. So it's kind of you're taking the money out of Vodacom and MTN's pocket and providing a service uncapped, which they can't get on mobile, but they can potentially afford it because there is that pool of money available that they're already giving to the mobile operators.
I don't think it's taking money from anybody. I think it's really creating an environment where you got data in abundance.
Yeah,
I wrote a little article on that and that is the thing. Mm-hmm. It's basically giving people uncapped access to data. For to study, to do the entertainment, and that is that's the plus. It's that abundance leg of it. Mm. It's the uncapped side of it.
Did you deploy the aerial in Mitchell's Plain aerially, or was it trenched?
No, it's trenched.
It's trenched fiber.
Yes. What? You're not allowed to actually do aerial in Mitchell's. Yeah. Because it's absolutely a beautiful little place, but it's well maintained in the areas where we're rolling out. So we're going to do the first 42,000 homes, but I think the market will grow to a 250,000-300,000 home market.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're going next, you know. So for me, it's clear going forward. It's really focusing on the business as usual.
Yeah.
That's obviously changing from a rollout and an infrastructure point of view to a maintenance and a customer-centric type of a customer focus point of view. And then it's secondary cities where we have to get to the, you know, we have to get a model that makes sense, you know, and that's always limited to the amounts of the how many homes are in that area from a backhauling and a cost point of view.
Yeah.
And the third thing is then I think there's going to be an explosion on the emerging side of it, you know, the people where people thought we'll never put fiber in. I really think there's huge opportunities there. And not just talking about it, really delivering on it, you know, and that's why I'm very proud to say we've delivered on the first 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the first active customers on it. But 42,000 homes will be connected within the next month.
Are you still looking at Alex?
Alex, yes. So Alex is and that will also happen.
Mm-hmm.
We got the approvals now. It's I haven't seen it yet, but the approvals from the municipalities we got. The Competition Commission also approved the project. You know, so really we're driving this hard now going forward. It will not be the same model as a Mitchell's Plains model. It will be a little bit more contended, you know, where you contend it. You might not be exactly the same. We're still testing it, so I don't want to announce that yet.
Sure.
But I believe within the next 2 months, 3 months, we'll have a very good solution on the table, and we can have another discussion maybe on what we're doing there.
Yeah, but the plan is still to roll out and definitely then have Wi-Fi providers on the ground providing services from the access
definitely
points.
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember Neil spoke about 89 rand a month. Is that still...
That's still the price point.
Still the price point.
So it's definitely under 100 price point. 89 is the price we have pinned.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So a rollout starting in the next few months?
Next few months, yes.
Okay. And Soweto, we've seen Frogfoot, which is part of Vox, announcing that they're going to do a limited rollout in parts of Soweto. Is that a market that interests you as well?
It's for me, I think everybody.
Yeah.
You know, but and we're going to go there definitely. I mean, there's so many houses to do, and that's a nice thing. You know, it's not that we competing. You know, we got 500,000, 600,000 homes nearly now. You know, if you look at market share now between us, so we got about a 41% total market share in South Africa on fiber to the home, homes passed. You know, if you look at subscriber market share, I think we're very close to, if you take SADV, if you look at it from a group point of view, we're also on about a 39% market share.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we only touched it. You know what I'm saying? I honestly see us going to the next million homes, you know, building the 600 to 1.5 million homes in time. And there we need competition. We need people to build. So it's very good that they started in Soweto, and it's very good that Open Service building in Soweto.
Yeah.
There'll be place for us to build in Soweto as well, and we'll compete on different things, not the area. It's basically the speed of execution, the quality of the build, and the retail sales model behind it. That's I think, what you compete. And then obviously your team of people, and that's where I think Buma is absolutely differentiating ourselves. It's if you look at the team of people that execute our initiatives, that's the one. You know, so I love competition. I love if people go into places. We just do it a little bit better every time. That's why we've got 600,000 homes out there.
Yeah. What's the total size of the market eventually? I mean, you mentioned that 1.5 million homes passed. Where does this stop?
I can't say really, because I mean, I've been here a year now. You
sure.
Know? But I just tell you that I would love, and I'm working towards this, to build... I mean, we would love to build 250,000 homes a year.
Mm.
You know, we doubled the network last year.
Yeah.
You know, so I would love to see. So I would love to see that we build the next million homes at least in the next 4 years.
Mm.
I think Open Summit will do a similar type of a thing, which they'll get maybe to not a million, but they'll get to a million, let's say. And Frogfoot obviously will also get to their little, and all the other players. I mean, there's so many FNOs out there, fiber networks out there now.
Yeah.
that I think everybody will build their piece, and some people will be very good on the secondary city markets, and some will be very good in the emerging markets. Mm-hmm. I would really love to be very good in the emerging markets, you know, because I think that's where the need is, that's where we can shape, and that's where we can impact South Africa.
What role do you see Vumatel playing in the rollout of 5G? We all know that 5G is going to require a very dense urban network of base stations, and that's going to need lots of fiber backhaul right down to the neighborhood street level. Are you having discussions with the mobile operators at this stage about 5G? Do you see 5G as a potentially a big growth area for Vumatel?
Duncan, if at the moment we're not talking to any MNOs. I mean, that's clear, and it's also too early to talk to anybody. I think.
Yeah.
I think just common sense. If I can say this, I mean, fiber. You need fiber. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've got fiber in the metro, especially the metros.
Yeah.
If you look at where they're going to roll out 5G, I mean, the first ones will be metro, super metro areas like Johannesburg, Cape Town, effectively.
Yeah.
And we've got the fiber there. If you look at the cost of a 5G network, I think 70 to 80% of that cost is fiber. Hmm. You know, so obviously there's huge opportunities for us in that side of it because we own the fiber.
Yeah.
And I think that's the next phase of our business. And it's too early to talk about it now. But sure. If you look at, again, the business as usual, you know, your first initial rollout in Joburg was first land grab, infrastructure. I believe it's moving to a maintenance type of a quality side, customer experience side of it. Mm. But a lot of focus on quality, really upgrading your network from a monitoring, from a redundancy point of view, a super quality network. That, in time, if we can get it right, can actually provide some of these backhaul services or fiber services to the 5G networks. But that's the next thing, and there I say it's we're going to move into the technology space of it a little bit, and there you might see things. Mm. You know, it might be just exactly how we're doing it now. We were just leasing out the fiber or renting out the fiber, but maybe more in a metro area.
Mm.
But I see definitely that going into a technology phase where the plug and plays, you know, like security surveillance type of scenarios.
Yeah. Just out of interest, and I suspect the answer is no, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Does Vumatel have any interest in getting into the mobile business itself? Are you interested in possibly participating in the upcoming spectrum auction?
Vumatel definitely no.
No.
Yeah. So it's, I think it's very clear. We are fiber to the home provider based on an open access model.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. And I think we're good at it.
Yeah.
You know, and we're going to keep our focus 100% on that.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned customer service and making sure that the network is robust, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd imagine it's a challenge when you've grown as fast as Vumatel has grown to ensure that customer service is in place, to ensure the network is optimal, to ensure you're responding quickly to customer requests, to downtime, to issues on the network. What investments have you made in that area? What are you doing to make sure that your customer service is top quality?
I think that was, if you ask me, over the last 12 months, the biggest thing I think we've done is we focused the company to a customer-focused type of an organization. And to do that, I mean, we first had to identify who the customers were. And remember, when you launch a network, it's like when you launch a network, like a fiber network, it's difficult to get the traction going. So what happens is Vuma goes up there and they do door-to-door knocking, and suddenly the customer has got this one-on-one with a Vuma type of an experience. But we're actually just the fiber provider.
Right.
You know, so I think we've clearly defined that the ISPs are the front end.
Yeah.
You know, so they then what we decided was, and what we did, and we worked very closely with the ISPs over the last year, is to get the systems integrated, to get their CRM systems totally integrated into our systems, so they've got full transparency of what's happening, and immediately they got control of their customer experience.
Right.
You know, so I think that's it. Getting the ISPs to work with us to get the end user to experience this world-class service. Mm-hmm. So what we've done is we've created APIs, interfaces with their CRM services. When you order now, you pick an ISP immediately. And if you look at the results, it's absolutely phenomenal what happened. If you look at our mean time to repair and average time to repair, we far under 10 hours in Cape Town, KZN, Ekurhuleni. Johannesburg is a little bit higher still. We're working on it, but mm-hmm. we're still under 20 hours. Mm-hmm. And we want to bring that down to far under 10 hours in time. And that's just because of it was the first network. You know, there's some quality that we have to obviously work on because it's an end-to-end process. But if you look at the results over time, it's absolutely amazing. If you look at our one-day install, you know, so when you get the order, you start the installs. We're over 90% now on one-day install. Hmm. So when we come to your house, we do the installation, we get you live within one day. Hmm. That's over 90% across the network.
Wow.
So there's a lot of things, but we haven't touched it yet. So I still believe on this customer experience side, you know, we're doing NPS now, Net Promoter Score type of analysis as well, working on the good things. What are the detractors? What are the promoters? And then the neutrals actually seeing, listen, how can we improve this over time?
Mm.
But we've only touched on this. I think that was not our key focus area in the first 2 years. But I think we totally changed it in the last year as a start. But yes. I believe we can go forward much better.
It never was going to be the key focus as you started, because, I mean, you've got to roll out fast.
We were rolling out, yeah.
Yeah.
But I honestly think, and we still have issues. I mean, there's still customers complaining. And the challenge was always to identify who the responsibility between the ISP and us.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter. But we the customer sees the service that's down. You know, we have to absolutely streamline the processes between us and the ISP in such a way that it's seamless for the customer at the end.
Mm.
But with the open access model, you know, where we've got 60 odd ISPs on our network, it makes it a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
Because that's our strategy, open access.
Yeah.
But now it's getting all these systems integrated. Now, I still believe that we can get their customer support a little bit better. We are looking at digitalizing all our support in time. So by end of December, we actually want to get to a very structured digital platform type scenario where we get away from outbound calls, call centers, inbound call centers, just focusing on outbound a little bit.
So you just kind of open an API to the ISPs and then they can connect into that.
But remember, you can do it for big ISPs because they've got big CRM systems. But now you've got a small little ISP sitting somewhere and you have to get a different system. So what we've done is over that API system, we put basically a screen that they can still through the portal access into us without spending millions.
Yes.
And they get exactly the same information, so they can they can handle their customer in exactly the same way as the big eight.
Mm. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. Dietlof Meyer is the CEO of fiber to the home provider Vumatel. Thanks so much for your time talking to Tech Central today.
Duncan, thank you so much for your time.